I can't really hear what Jeremy says because I got my two Stanley Cup rings plugged in my ear.
Welcome in, everybody, to the 41st edition of the Can't Hear What Jeremy Says podcast. We're currently recording live from Blake Street Tavern, just a block away from Coors Field, and we couldn't be happier to be here. I'm currently chilling out with a smothered burrito and, of course, a trusty Coke. And we're going to be doing things a little bit different here today because we are at a different location. I will be your host today. I am Reagan Smith, and joined with me, as always, is the man, the myth, the legend, the one in charge of Colorado Hockey Now, Mr. Adrian Dater. Dater, how are you doing? It's been about a little over a year, I think, since I've seen you.
I know. I was just thinking that. We talk all the time, but I haven't actually seen you since, what, Arizona, maybe?
I think it was the Blues game in January of 2020, right?
Right. Yeah, so here you, it's good to see you back, kid. We're at Blake Street Tavern, which we're excited to announce is a new partner of Colorado Hockey Now. It's a legendary institution, Blake Street Tavern, down by Coors Field. And they're the new proud podcast sponsor of Can't Hear What Jeremy Says. So thank you to Chris Fusilier, the owner. Everybody knows about Blake Street Tavern. We'll be talking a lot more about that in future shows. We're going to have some official ads rolling out soon, next podcast probably, but it's a thrill to be here. And we're here on Sunday, AFC...
Divisional.
Division games. We just had about 12 people dressed in Chiefs gear come in here, so...
Times
are changing in Denver. Well, I'm a Patriot fan, so... So... I think it felt worse for some people in here than me, but hey, you know, can't win them all, right?
Right.
Yeah, Reagan Smith, you're the new drive host. You're the new host of the show too. You're going to be driving the show more, so people don't have to listen to me hem and haw as much. We think that's a good addition to the show, and so that's why welcome Reagan to more of an active role on this podcast.
Well, as long as I don't drive it into an iceberg, I think this will be pretty fine. Yeah. Hands on 10-2, right? Well, the Habs finally kicked off their season. Felt like months and months. In reality, it was the shortest offseason we've seen ever. Nonetheless, it's good to be back. I know you went to the bubble. You covered them during their playoff run. But now you're doing basically kind of the same thing. But now you're back here in Denver. How's it being back inside of, I guess, Ball Arena?
I'll tell you what, man. It was weird. But I am used to it now. I went through 2 months of it in Edmonton, so I know what it's like to play in front of an empty building. There's actually a lot more people around me than there ever was in Edmonton. I mean, we've got, you know, 8 to 10 other Avs media around in the game, and you got the TV folks sitting to my right and left. So, but it's still no fans in the stands. It's when a goal is scored, you just all you think you really hear is the players cheering real quick, and then you hear a goal horn. They do have the goal horn, I think, that they're playing. Although I think it's the old goal horn, and not the goal horn itself, but it's still the
recording.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to too much of that stuff usually because I'm always flustered about what just happened. But pulled it off. Everything, you know, ran smoothly. I thought the ice looks good. Everything was. It's on point for the games. You still have Jake Schroeder doing the anthem. You still have, all the graphics. You got the Who playing Won't Get Fooled Again after the second period when the team takes the ice. Everything's the same except no fans. I hope that changes at some point. But until then, we've actually got hockey games, and quality of play was great. And the Avs are 1-1 after two games. 4-1 loss opening night. 8-0 victory in game two. Quite a statement in game two.
Absolutely. When you look at that, you know, I think everybody went after that first game of the season was like, that just didn't look like the Avs team we know. And then they come out 2 days later and absolutely smack around the Blues, and everyone's like, that's the Avs team we know. What do you think kind of got them off to that slow start? Was it just maybe they weren't ready to play? Maybe they're there mentally, but just not there physically quite yet?
I think it was more of opening night jitters in a way. I think everything was just weird that night. I think everybody hadn't played a game yet in home, in front of no fans. I think it felt like something was off from the get-go. Even though the Avs took that 1-0 lead on Burakovsky's goal, it always seemed like they were just off. And, you know, the second period came around, things went south pretty quick. You know, it was still a 2-1 game in the third period. I thought they'd tie it up somehow and make it at least a point. But, you know, Clark Clifford stole a puck and then, you know, got a kind of a bad goal on Grubbe there. I mean, it's a good shot by him, but it should have been saved probably. And then Grubbe misplays a puck behind the net. Gets caught running around 4-1. Let's not forget, too, the Blues are a very good team. You know, they didn't lose to a bunch of, you know, kindergartners out there. They're a good team. They won the Stanley Cup a year and a half ago.
And they'll probably be a top three team this year in the West.
I think so.
Anyways,
I mean, so. I think, you know, it's going to be a dogfight between the Avs, Golden Knights, and Blues for that division. But after what the Avs did to the Blues the next game, I think that's going to give them another level of confidence that's going to be hard for the Blues to overlook. You know, like, anytime you get beat that bad, you're going to think, boy, you know, that's a team that's capable of really spanking us, I guess, you know. You know, I think the Avs just got their heads together and they did everything they said they'd do. They came out right from the jump and they were on pucks, right? They were on every puck. They were focused. They made smart little plays. They managed the puck real well. They got the puck out of the zone great. Sam Girard was amazing getting with breakouts. Everybody made crisp transition plays. Shifts were good. They got off the ice at just the right time. They just sort of overwhelmed the Blues with a momentum of the line changes and just flow of the game that just, you know, it was still scoreless after one, but after that, boy, it was absolute domination really from the start. But then they finally got rewarded in the second, third periods.
After that first period, I think people realize that, hey, the Avs were dominating this game, but everyone knows Blues wind up scoring that first goal. It could turn everything on its head just because of how long it had been without a goal. But obviously, Avs came out and just laid a thrashing. But it wasn't only a thrashing. It was an 8-0 shutout to a Blues team that you could easily see in the conference final, or not conference finals, I guess, by the new playoff format. But a team that you could easily see in the playoff matchup from the get-go. So I know it's only game one and two, but to get that type of thrashing taken ahead when you play them so many times in a season, I mean, what does that do confidence-wise?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to play them 8 times. You got 25% of those games over already, and you beat them 8-0 in the second. You can now laugh off that first game a little bit more as a fluke, an excuse, you know, it won't happen again. You know, they'll come out hard the next time they play them too, but, you know, 8-0's real statement showing. You know, the chances are very good they're going to play the Blues at some point before the conference finals, because it's going to be 1-4 in the East Division in the playoffs. I assume 1 will play 4, 2 will play 3, and those two teams will play each other in the semifinals and then on to the conference finals against the Central Division team. So, very good chance they're going to have to beat the Blues again in a 7-game series. I thought that was a nice way to make a statement. Now, of course, it's only early season, a long way to go, but I'm feeling a lot better about the Avs than I did that opening night. I thought, is this going to be a thing where, you know, they're going to get over big-headed, they read their clippings too much, is this going to be a funky thing? Are they going to come out and lose game two as well? No, they just destroyed them, and they look focused and really, really confident and really, really good.
That's always one of those things that you're always kind of worried about when a team has such high expectations is, are they going to completely crap the bed, so to speak, and just not perform to the level that you're expecting? Maybe they're put over, but I think the Avs proved in that second game that, hey, we're here to stay, and watch out, NHL, we're coming for you. It was
I thought Gabe Landeskog made a good point yesterday when talking and said, I actually asked the question, though. I've noticed that the Avs have been better with the lead the last year or two. They don't let up as easily as they used to. they don't relax as much as they used to. They're holding on. They got better as the game went along. They didn't relax. So, and he made a good point. I think it's maturity. They have more maturity as a team now. The younger they were, the more they would relax and maybe believe their clippings. They're not a team that's going to overly celebrate any regular season victory now, like they used to do a little too much, in my opinion. So that was just a routine thing that they did and they expected the other night. So that's, to me, that's good. They never let the foot off the gas. And, you know, that's, to me, something that has to be done. They have to do that maturity process, get to that next level if they are going to win a Stanley Cup. Because, yeah, we've seen teams that have a lot of press clippings and get built up, and then they don't do it like, you know, Colorado Rockies baseball, you know? I mean, there you go. I mean, how many times have they been projected to be young, hungry team that's going to, you know, they didn't even have 500 record. So it's important not to get all big-headed and you just, you know, I remember covering the old Avs days, you know, that. It's like, we haven't won squat yet. You know, Patrick Waugh would always say that. Claude Lemieux would always say that. Hey, big win, right, Claude? You know, regular season win here. And he's like, no, we haven't done squat yet.
Doesn't mean nothing.
It would have meant nothing. We haven't even played real hockey yet. That's the attitude you have to have if you're going to be a championship team.
So after the first two games of the year, you finally get to see them a little bit. What's kind of impressed you so far? About the team, I know only two games in, but you at least got to see them a little bit. You know, what's been the biggest plus for you so far?
Well, I would say, I mean, it's kind of hard to say much impressed me in the first game, but I still thought that, you know, they didn't play a terrible game in game one. They, you know, they made a couple bad plays in the third period. I'd say their checking's been good for the most part. Certainly wasn't game two, but just the skating speed's been good. I mean, they certainly had some good scoring chances in game one. Binnington really robbed them a few times. Offensively, they've looked fine, you know. Managing the puck was a problem in game one, defensive zone play at times. Sam Girard made a turnover in the third period. Ian Cole was running around a little bit. The second line obviously had a rough night. Landeskog, Kadri, Saad, minus 10 combined.
That's not good, right?
That's not good. No, that's not good. And everything changed in game two. Bednar did move Landy back to the top line and gets two goals, number 199 and 200. So Bednar looks good for game two. We'll see. I think, you know, everything's going to stay the same for the game in L.A. Tuesday night, which Colorado Hockey Now will be there, by the way. And thank you for your tip jar donations, people. You can always don't be shy to click on it still. And, yeah, I think, you know, I feel real good about going in this week. I mean, I feel like if they don't get at least 6 points out of eight, that'll be a rotten trip.
Yep.
And, you know, it's right there for them. They sometimes have trouble in L.A. and California. You never know sometimes how whether the California doldrums are going to get to them a little bit, or the weather, maybe too much time at the beach, something. But yeah, they can't go out of the hotel rooms anymore, so I guess it doesn't matter there. I feel good about the week ahead.
When you see line changes like where Landeskog gets placed back on that top line and things along those lines, what do you think makes that line so deadly? Is it the chemistry, or is it the amount of skill that all three possess together on the ice? Because it was shocking, the discrepancy sometimes when they're not on a line together.
Yeah, I think it's familiarity. You know, I think I think Mikko seems to like playing with Landy a little bit more than other guys, maybe. It doesn't seem like he and Burakovsky mix quite as well at times. You know, Nate seems to play with anybody. You know, we don't have to necessarily worry anybody he plays with. He's going to play the same way.
And he's going to make a play.
But I do think that it seems like Mikko and Gabe like playing with each other more than other guys. So, you know, Bednar is going to... One bad game, though, and everybody goes back into the Bednar blender, so to speak. And you know, it's all about what you did for him lately. So, but I do think that that's a sign that, you know, Bednar knows he can always go to those three and probably get a real damn good game when he wants it. I think he wanted to mix in Landy and see how he did with Kadri and hopefully add some more heft to that line. But let's face it, you know, a minus 10 showing in the first game. It would be different if it was just one minus, you know, one fluky goal against and they did some chances, but they had a truly terrible game. So I guess in a shortened season, you can't get on Bednar too much for wanting to make changes.
And one of the players that you and I have both kind of really been impressed with, he's pretty quiet in terms of stat-wise, but Connor Timmins seemed to really impress, especially on the back check. What did you see from him?
I really liked him. I mean, I've always liked him. Just haven't seen enough of him. But he was part of a great defensive crew in game two. I didn't think he was bad in game one. A couple of people commented that he seemed a little off, but I didn't really notice that. I thought Ian Cole was the more of a problem than anybody in that game. Ian Cole hasn't really looked that great so far. And he's got a lot of pressure on him with Bo Byram and Eric Johnson in practice today as the eighth and ninth defensemen. we'll talk more about that in the next segment maybe, but I like Timmins. Great to see him healthy. He was great in game two. Question is, you know, how long is he going to be a regular player? He will start in the top six on the start of the road trip. Bednar confirmed that today. He's on the taxi squad, I guess, technically, but Bednar said they're not concerned too much about that. When you see that, he will be playing in the top six on Tuesday night and probably, I would assume, the next game after that. By then, though, EJ may have enough practice reps or Byram, depending on the results of the games. We'll go from there.
Well, that's something we can talk a little bit more in that second segment, because the Avs do have 3 games in 4 days and 4 games in 6 days on that road trip, which is really their first taste of this shortened season and the adversity that they'll have to go with. But another player that kind of wanted to focus on was Philip Grubauer, because I know Scott in his article made the point that a reporter had asked if Grubauer looked a little slow in his glove hand, and Bednar pushed it off, said absolutely not. But Grubauer did look a little off in that first game. And in that second game, definitely rebounded well. Obviously, he had a freaking shutout, so talk about a good rebound. But what have you seen from Grubauer so far, and what are your thoughts on him?
I did think Gruby looked a little shaky in the first game, and I was, worried, probably, about that. You know, the goals sort of went right through him on the third period, especially that Clifford shot. Bad play on the fourth goal. But, you know, one game is one game. And, the thing is, every loss is magnified in this 56-game season. My math is correct. It's basically every loss is magnified by about one-third over what would have been an 82-game season. So, and every win. So it's important. And that is still going to be the question that's on everybody's mind. Is the goaltending good enough? I asked Pierre McGuire, Dave Reed, Ray Ferraro, three hockey experts, their thoughts on the Avs this year. And to a man, all of them said, very good cup. And I think there's a cup there, but the question is, will the goaltending be good enough? So it's not going to go away. It's not going to go away until game four of a victory in the Stanley Cup Finals about this team. Or any goalie that's never won before is always going to be said, well, can he win in the playoffs? Well, we've seen Grubauer win one round twice.
Yep.
Which is more than any goalie has done since the Patrick Waugh days. You see games like the other night, and you go, goaltending was a factor in the loss, you know. And it's not going to stop the critics. Let's face it, he didn't have to stand on his head in the second game. But he did make the saves early, which is always what you need to do. And I think he'll be all right. It's just, he's going to have to keep proving it.
Yeah, and as you said, Grubauer really didn't have to make too terribly many saves until really the end of the game, and then that save on Shin and that at the end of that first period was huge for the Avs.
Yeah.
Now, you kind of mentioned this slightly, is that injuries are kind of going to be this driving factor. It killed the Avs in the playoffs last season, and especially when you looked at the goaltending. So does a 56-game season kind of help the Avs in that regard, you think?
I mean, I hope so. You can't bargain too much about injuries. They're either going to happen or they don't. You can do as much as you can to try and prevent them, but a puck to the head or something, a concussion, who knows? You know, it's just too much. The thing is, you got to just do the best you can off the ice, on the, you know, preparation, recovery. Bednar's been stressing that. You know, get your rest. Maybe there's more of an emphasis, I think, judging by the reading between the lines, that Avs players, you know, really making sure when they're off the ice, not doing stupid things, not, you know, no all-night benders or anything. Whatever, just rest, recuperate, and do the right things. But, you know, you just can never say, well, you know, I don't know if a shortened season helps them or not on injuries. We don't know. I mean, we've already seen some players go out with concussions and other injuries around the league. I mean, Sean Couturier is out for 2 weeks now. The Flyers, you know, with a couple other injuries I'm forgetting here. But, you know, injuries are going to happen, and that's the way it goes. I think it's going to help, though, the fact that they don't have to travel as much, that they'll be in each city for a few days. I do think that that will help them as far as rest goes, and mentally and physically. And I think mental part is almost as important sometimes as physical. When you're getting back at 4 a.m. from every game, that can interfere with your sleep. It can affect a lot of stuff. So they won't have to do that as much. They're only going to be one flight there, 3 or 4 days in a city, and back, you know. So, and all the flights are 2 hours or less, basically, in the division. So no 5-hour flights coming home from the East Coast. I think all that stuff will help the Avs in the end, hopefully.
For sure. All right, we're going to take our showly break. When we come back, we'll talk some transactions. We kind of already got into a little bit, but we're going to focus on Bo and Byram. And when we come back, we'll also talk about how the road trips are different this season. It's very much like a college-style series per series. How does that affect a team, and how do they adapt with something kind of new like this? All that coming up. We'll be right back. Hey guys, I know that this is the part where you'd be expecting an ad, but instead of an ad this time, I want to advocate a special day for a special organization. So this isn't an ad as much as it is a call to awareness for this. And that special thing is Mobius Syndrome Awareness Day, which is on Sunday, January 24th this year. I'm sure you're asking, well, why this syndrome? And that's because my cousin has this syndrome, and I'm sure 99% of you guys listening in don't know what Mobius syndrome is, so let me kind of explain it to you. Mobius syndrome is a rare congenital neurological condition that can affect several cranial nerves, particularly those that control the muscles of the face. In most cases, the 6th and 7th cranial nerves are missing from birth, and the absence of these nerves leads to the characteristic facial paralysis, creating a mask-like appearance, speech impairment, and numerous other symptoms of this syndrome. It's approximated that only 15,000 to 25,000 people worldwide have Mobius syndrome, and that makes it one of the rarest conditions in the world. And so to help raise awareness for this syndrome, we ask that you please wear purple on January 24th and visit the website manyfacesofmobiussyndrome.org or infobs.org to learn more about this extremely rare condition. Mobius Syndrome Awareness Day is an annual event that was created by the nonprofit organization Many Faces of Mobius Syndrome, as I just mentioned, their website, infobs.org, and it's celebrated each year on January 24th, which coincides with the birth date of Professor Paul Julius Mobius, the doctor who first reported the condition back in 1888. This is a special cause for me, so if you guys would be willing to check out the website infobs.org and just kind of educate yourself on this rare syndrome and potentially spread the word, that could be way more than I could ever ask for, and I would be incredibly grateful for it. Anyways, let's get back to the show. And welcome back to the Can't Hear What Jeremy Says podcast. We are live here from Blake Street Tavern. The Kansas City Chiefs-Cleveland Browns game has just kicked off, but we're here to talk some hockey. Segment two, let's talk about some Mr. Bo Byram, Team Canada's captain in the World Juniors.
Yeah, Bo Byram, back at practice today, kid. He's going to go on the road trip, but he's going to be on the taxi squad for a few days. I don't expect him to play before this next weekend. But he's on the team. I asked Bednar whether he's any chance to go back to the Vancouver Giants or not, and he sort of punted that question to say that's a Joe Sakic question. I really don't think he's going to go back at all, no matter what, to the Vancouver Giants. I don't think the Avs want to waste him there. I think they'd always like to have him on the roster in case danger strikes. And I think he's going to sign a pro contract at some point here real soon and then just become a regular part of the team, taxi squad or a regular part. Doesn't matter, but I think they want him here all year.
And he's kind of in an interesting situation because let's say the WHL does, in fact, start up. If he were to return, he has to quarantine. And if the Avs have any form of injury situation and they need him back and he agrees to come back, that's another week.
Yeah.
That's a fifth of the season gone just from COVID regulations. It just really doesn't make too much sense, does it?
None of it makes sense for him to go back to junior.
Also, talent level.
I think some things still need to be ironed out when it comes to the AHL, but apparently he's not going to be able to play in the AHL because of his age, even if he signed a pro contract.
Yeah.
Because he's too young, and there is a rule that you can't be a 19-year-old in the AHL.
That's an agreement with the CHL that you either have to play with 4 years in the minors
now,
or have to be
right.
20.
Now, I think he may be able to practice there at first. I thought he could at least at first. Something we still need to get clarified on. But the bottom line is, folks, I think he's going to be on the Avalanche the whole season, bottom line. They don't want to waste him again in junior hockey. That's not going to do him any good. And there's too much potential good for him to be, to be around. Ben and I said today, he can help our hockey club win games. And that's all I needed to hear to think he's going to be here all year.
And that's kind of another thing. Like, when you have a player like Bo, who we are currently looking at right now as he's about to give an answer some interview questions, when you have a player like him, does it actually kind of hurt to go back to juniors, per se, when you can be practicing with an NHL team whenever you want? Sure, it's not game experience, but you're still practicing with the best of the best.
I think so. I think it depends on the experience level of the player, but now that he spent 3 full years in the Giants, and I think he spent part of 4th, I think. I might be wrong on that, but that's enough. That's enough time in junior hockey. Like, he's been just dominated at the World Junior Tournament. He's damn well, too, he wants to be. Even if he doesn't play a lot, he's still going to want to call himself an NHL player, not go back to the bushes of junior hockey where guys can maybe take cheap shots on him. And also, by the way, he gets paid real money. sure he wouldn't mind that. So in a perfect world, I think it would be good if he played regularly and maybe some at the AHL level. I think in this COVID year, shortened season, he's going to be playing regularly probably by next season anyway. It's only a few months away as it is, 8 months, I guess, not just two, but just put him on the roster now and let's see what happens. That's my attitude.
And if you're familiar with college hockey, you know that they always play weekend series. It's something that I've always been covering with Arizona State throughout the last few years. Kansas City just missed their extra point. That's rough.
Yeah.
But, I'm used to these types of series where you go back-to-back with the exact same team. And obviously, the playoffs are kind of like that, but never to this 2 games and then it's on to the next guy. How does that change, I guess, strategy with teams? Because in a lot of ways, you see the team once, you can already make changes for the next game. And, oh, by the way, that next game's either tomorrow night or one day later.
Yeah, I've been asking that question all seasons long so far to everybody, and everybody's like, well, we'll see. But, I think it is going to be good advantages for especially a good team like the Avs. When you know you've got a team that you know a little bit figured out and you know you're better than them, I think if you just go out and hammer them in a little easier the next time. I think we've seen so far teams that have won that first game have had trouble the next game, so that's already been an early season trend. The Blues, obviously, were part of that trend. So to me, that'll be an interesting thing to see. Who wins it? Whoever wins that first game, are they going to let their foot off the gas the next game? I think the Avs are going to be a team that is not going to have that problem as much. But I think it's going to be fun for the fans, too, to sort of have a mini playoff series, maybe more rivalry feel, maybe get to know other teams a little better. You'd love to see them play the Sidney Crosbys of the world, Eastern teams, but let's face it. Usually when they play a team like the Florida Panthers or something, you're like, I don't really know anything about these guys. I don't know enough to really care as much and have as much knowledge as if I know, I know the Minnesota Wild, I know the Blues, so I think it'll be fun. I wouldn't want to see that every year, but this whole year is going to be, we're back to the old original six days in a way.
Yeah, that's one of those interesting things is that, like, the team that wins the first game, are they going to say, well, we'll at least get a split out of this, and winning every other game's pretty okay in our books. I think if your team's like Avs, Vegas, or St. Louis, I don't think that's an acceptable thought process in their minds, but it is an interesting dynamic, and it's also going to be interesting to see how teams utilize their goaltenders, especially in those back-to-back situations.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of alternating goalies, and I'm sure we're going to see Frankie, I would say, twice on this trip. So, Bednar said he does want to play Groovy 65% of the time. So it would make sense that Philip or Frankie plays probably the next game. That would be 66% of the time that Groovy would play if it was three games. He won't name his goalie yet, but I think we'll see Frankie Tuesday night, and I think we'll see that all year. We have to. You can't overwork a goalie in a shortened schedule like that. You don't want to burn him out injury-wise in the playoffs, for the playoffs, and mentally. That said, you don't want to give games away either just with your backup. I think it'll be game-by-game basis still. And overall, there might be times where Groovy's just red hot. They don't want to take him out. That could happen, And maybe Frankie only plays 25% of the time. We'll see.
And teams are allowed to have an unlimited amount of goalies on their taxi squad. Because of that, do you think we'll see a few teams that will try to roll with three, potentially four goalies throughout the years just to kind of give their goalies a little bit of rest?
No, I think it'll be three tops. I'd be surprised still if we see Hunter Miska play at all, to be honest with you. Sorry, Hunter. I know probably there's some fans out there who want to see him play, but again, we're talking about a 56-game schedule. You can't just give games away like you can in an 82-game schedule. So he'll be fine playing. He's making an NHL salary up here. So, although I think it has to be his AHL salary while he's here, but he does get NHL per diem and stuff like that. I don't know. It's a lot of moving parts.
And the Avs will get their first taste of the COVID schedule, so to speak. Three games in 4 days, four games in 6 days. That's a lot of games in a short amount of time. Obviously, they kind of dealt with that with the playoffs, but now you're also traveling to another city. You don't get the amenities that the bubble had. You're stuck in your hotel, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot of poker games going on inside of there, but how do you think a teams are going to try to adapt to that? Because it's a lot of playing and very little time, and then you have no release into the outside world to boot on top of it.
Yeah, the players are not supposed to be visiting in each other's rooms, so I assume there'll be a common area where they can do stuff like in the bubble, but I know that the restrictions can be different for different cities. California's going to be more strict, I think. That's the questions I'll be asking probably this week more. What's it been like on the road for you guys? So I probably need a few more days to expound on that, but I imagine it's going to be all they have is themselves, really. Talk about team bonding.
Right.
I mean, ever since COVID hit, those guys are probably a little sick of each other in a way, but I'm not right now. Of course, they've been have been apart for a few months, but yeah, we'll see in a couple months.
Going at each other's throats.
Yeah, we might. I'd love to see a hidden camera on what's really going on the team. But, you know, that's the way it is. We're in different times, man, still, unfortunately.
That's kind of a good point to segue in towards our kind of the closing here. You're going to be out there in L.A. for this road series. I mean,
yep.
That's going to be kind of weird for you. Obviously, you're not trapped into one little hotel room. I'm sure you'll be spending a lot of time there because of everything being shut down. But,
yep.
I mean, it's going to be a weird adaptation for you, isn't it? Four games in 6 days,
yeah.
And you're going to have to drive between L.A., Anaheim.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be a lot for you as well.
Yeah, only an hour drive, though, on the 405. I'll be staying in a lovely Days Inn near Disneyland, so... all you tip jar givers, that's a lot of that money went there. $350 for 7 nights with tax. Not too bad.
Not too bad at all.
Not too bad at all. Hopefully no bed bugs.
Don't want that experience again, do you?
No. $46 flight, too, round trip.
Damn.
They're giving stuff away on the airlines, yeah. $46 round trip fare.
Love it.
With good times and direct flights, too. Thank you, Frontier Airlines. Maybe... there's more room on the advertising skid here, Frontier. Yeah, be there. We'll see. I know what it's like to be in an empty arena already on the road, so I'm not anticipating much. I know Minnesota Wild writer from Star Tribune was there in L.A. And I think, you know, it's just hockey, but no fans, so we... we better get out of here before we get run over by Browns and Chiefs fans, right? This
right.
place has been taken over by Chiefs Kingdom.
Well, Matt, we'll wrap it up here for us on the Can't Hear What Jeremy Says podcast. Tell us what you think about this new format, if you like it, dislike it, what you'd like to see, what you don't want to see, or I guess here. Here's the correct word there. I'm your host, Reagan Smith. With me is Adrian Dater. Adrian, you're going to have to keep us all updated on how each arena is handling the COVID situation differently. So I'm sure everything's a little bit different everywhere.
Will do. I'll try to snag a souvenir from L.A. or something. Hopefully I can find an old Gretzky jersey for you or something, kid. Maybe I'll get a discount. I know you're a Jersey aficionado. But, yeah, thanks for listening, folks. Tell us what you think. Give us a 5-star review. Even if you don't want to, you know, helps us out. And on to next week, right?
Yes, sir. Right. See you when you come back.
Thanks to Blake Street Tavern, and we'll sign off here for everybody else. Hit the outro song. By the way, that is called Burbank Funk by the Internet. That's our closeout song, in case you guys want to know. Thanks, Reagan.